the Inside Running Podcast. Thanks for joining us again. My name is Brady Trailfall. I'm joined with Julian Spence and Bradley Croker, and we're here to talk about all things running. Thanks for joining us. How are we, fellas?
All going well.
All going well down Ballarat. What about Canberra, Brad?
Yeah, a bit crooked the last few days, so no good. But chatting to you boys is better than a Panadol, so I'm sure I'll feel good after the podcast.
Just saying, off air, you sound a bit husky. Good for the female listeners out there, I reckon.
Yeah, sound a bit more like a man than normal.
Actually, that's what I get a lot of. When they've seen you, photos of you, Brad, they go, oh, I didn't expect him to look so, like, runnerish, which is not normally a good thing.
You do.
I didn't expect him to be so small. Basically, that's what I keep hearing.
Aren't most runners small?
Oh, I mean, yeah, but they sound like Brady, like jockey, high small voice, yeah, chipmunk. They kind of look like they sound. Whereas you sound like maybe a little bit more distinguished, and then you just look like it. But that's all right.
Depends what
thanks,
photos you
that
look
as a compliment.
If you look at his race day photos, though, like spring racing carnival photos, they wouldn't be expecting that.
No, well, no one is. Because if you look at him on a Monday, he's got white shades, a fox hoodie, and DC shoes on.
It's one extreme or the other with Brad. Like, he rather wins fashions on the field, or he looks like he's just come from the local skate park.
He's very true. I think his natural get up is white dragon shades and the big black hoodie.
Yeah. Lucky he's got Viv to keep him in line, I reckon. He's done well there. How's the week
natural
been, boys?
Bogan.
Natural bogan. How's the week been, Julian? Give us a bit of a rundown of last week's running.
Yeah, well, I got another solid weekend. Probably from whenever we recorded last time, it would have been around 150 to 160k, I reckon. When did we record last time? I reckon it was early in the week, so Tuesday. I don't think I would have got Tuesday session in there.
No, give us Monday to Sunday last week. We're pretty much timing this way better now, yeah. We're back to the road to Berlin kind of timing.
Yeah, the end of the week, or how I call a week, sort of is Monday to Sunday.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, so just easy running on Monday. I try to get in some good K's. We have a good group on a Monday in Ballarat where we basically just talk absolute shit for 70 minutes. It's quite funny. You can't get away without copying something in that run. And then Tuesday, because I was doing a bit of a time trial on the Thursday, it wasn't an important race, but I didn't want to do too much. I was going to do some 200s down the track, so Dolce and I went down there. I put some spikes on, and I thought, oh, I wonder how fast I can run the 200 in. And so I got a bit carried away, and I really got after it. I ran 10 of them. Rest was very generous, because that was the whole point, is to actually run a speed workout where speed is the priority. And I ran 130, 129, and the rest were either 28s or 27s. And for me, that was a pretty good workout, because I haven't done a lot of speed work. It's just been mainly hills. So it's starting to come together there. But then I woke up Wednesday and I was stuffed. Like, my quads were so sore. I just put a lot into that session when I really didn't need to. and then Thursday went down. I've got a few athletes who I coach in Geelong, and they've got a pretty good group down there. And I used to be part of that group. It's always Thursday night, sort of meet at the track, set up. A couple of Ballarat boys went down, Nico, Van Raphorst, and Dolce. We went down to do a 3K time trial with the Geelong group, pretty much because we were all planning on doing the milers meet last week, but we never actually found the time, or we didn't. We were probably a week behind everyone else, and we didn't enter. So we wanted to get a 3K in before the track season really kicks off. So we got there. It was just torrential rain, pretty much consistent of how most of the races are that I've done over the past 5 years. Gale force winds and torrential rain, and There's a good, decent puddle in at the 100-meter mark of the track, and then coupled with that, there was actually triathlon group on the track, kids training group, sprinting group, so it was pretty packed for how shit the weather was. But yeah, it was a good night. Couple of eye-openers, basically just seeing where we're at for the season. But I ran 8:52, which was, look, I thought that was a pretty good run for me on the night, given that I've only done about 3 weeks worth of track training so far, so I wasn't expecting much. What I noticed was that I couldn't change gears at all. So my first lap was 69, and then I just basically ran six laps of 71s. I felt like I could have kept going at that pace, but I definitely couldn't have got faster. So I was just stuck in that real marathon feel that where I couldn't put any surges on, or I couldn't actually pick up the pace. And I'm all right with that if I can keep that up for another five laps next week. So hopefully I can pull out something around that sort of pace for the 5K. Behind me, real potential, this fella called Craig Davis, who is actually the amateur or the age group world champion in the half Ironman distance from, I think it was last year, 2016. So he's pretty much, he hasn't given up on triathlon, but he's really concentrating on his running now. So he ran 9:07 off bugger all training, like next to nothing. He's going to be he's running the 5K on Thursday as well, and I think he's going to go really well. Jeez, I hope he's not in my heat, actually. I better check that. He could be in the B heat. And then another triathlete who I don't coach ran next. He's more a runner now. And then a few of the Ballarat fellas and, yeah, a couple of other guys all had decent runs. No one had a standout run, but it was kind of pretty much just to see where we're at.
Did you lead the whole way? Sorry, did you?
Yeah, I did. No one
jumped in for four laps or anything, pulled you through?
No, it was pure solo. Like, actually, there wasn't. We didn't really do a very good. We didn't have a very good group set up. Everyone seemed to run the whole way by themselves. So the boys behind me probably could have worked a little better. They all ran within maybe 20 seconds of each other, so they could have worked together, but didn't really work out like that.
How long does it take you to drive to Geelong?
About 70 minutes.
Oh, okay. I thought it was longer than that. Okay, that's okay. I thought it was like 2 to 2 hours or whatever. So
yeah,
it's a long way for a time trial.
Yeah, I had to go pick up something like the running company van, because I had an event this weekend. So I had to go down there anyway, and it kind of just worked out really well.
Yeah.
And then Saturday morning, went down the lake, ran 4x8 minutes with 2 minutes recovery, and my goal was to hit anywhere from 3:10 to 3:15 for the ons. And I ran 3:12, and then the rest were 3:13s, I think. So that was good, but it was probably a little harder than what I expected. I think for that workout, I should have been maybe backed it off, maybe ran 3:16s and then 3:17s and be at a comfortable pace rather than sort of really working for it in that workout. And then on Sunday, I did a long run with the boys, and the pace got going late up the hills. Yeah, I wasn't really ready for that. So I was hanging on for dear life, and it was nice to see the cars at the end. So yeah, that's my week.
Yeah, it's an interesting week, isn't it? Like the extreme speed on the Tuesday and the Thursday, and then a good threshold-like session and a long run on the Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, well, on the Thursday, actually, I forgot. We did a threshold after the 3K time trial.
Yeah, so, I saw that.
I always love doing that because it really helps to clear the lactic quickly. If you finish that 3K, you can feel real heavy. You get straight into that. We had about an 8 to 10 minute break, and then we did the 10 minute threshold. And everyone commented that they felt amazing during it, and they finished feeling much better than they did after 3K, which was pretty much the point of that workout. So yeah, that was another workout, I guess. So I got three good workouts in.
And the purpose of that time trial, that's just to get the cobwebs out ready for the 5K this Thursday, isn't it? Like get on the track and just have a blowout?
Yeah, the paces. Basically, it just opens your eyes to what a 70-second lap feels like. Gives you a bit of an idea that it's not going to – but takes away the fear that it's not going to kill you. And I actually got a lot of – excitement after I finished. I thought, oh shit, I missed the track, like that was fun. I really liked that, and now, like before that, I was thinking, oh, I don't even want to do this 5K, and now I'm like, oh cool, like that was really fun, let me do it again. And the other boys, some of them, it was their first track race ever. Craig, it wasn't a race, but Craig Davis, the triathlete, he it was pretty much his first race on the track ever. Or hard run on the track. So he needed to learn about a little bit about it. Not that it was a big pack, but you need to do at least one, I reckon.
Yeah. It's a good different world, isn't it? Just like going fast around those bends and straightening up in the straights, like it's, you need to practice it.
Yeah. And it, like, you can work out the differences, you can find your rhythm, settling in behind someone or moving around them at the right times. I mean, track running is a skill. It takes a long time to learn, but at least for these guys, they've run on a track now. That's one step.
And those 200s are decent. You reckon you could bang 10 of those out, Brad, in 28?
I don't know. He was having about 4 minutes rest between them, wasn't he?
Wasn't he? Yeah, I didn't look at it.
90 seconds.
See how he put on field recovery? Yeah. Like, yeah.
I'd be very sore the next day if I was running that quick, I think. But I'd back myself to be able to run some 28s. Yeah.
Yeah, speed king. Was that the first time you put on spikes as well for the season?
I did half a workout the week before in them.
Okay.
And so I pulled up okay. Sometimes I pull up real rough other times. I've been doing a bit of calf work in the gym, so that's sort of, I reckon, got me ready during the winter for more spike work.
Solid week. Looking good coming in this 5K on Thursday night, State 5K champs.
Yeah, like I said, I'm excited for it now. I want to get, Brady and I got put in the B heat, which is perfect because that's where I wanted to be. Certainly not near those A grade fellas at the moment, and I think from what I've seen, it'll be a competitive race in the B race. So I want to get in the mix. I want to do a bit of racing. And
you said you're going to win it.
Yeah, well,
you called
it. I'm going to try and win it. No, I didn't say that. I said I'm going to try and win it.
Try and win it. Yeah, that's a good plan, I reckon. Good plan.
Yeah, try and win it. Like, you're not going to go and say, oh, I'm going to go in, I'm going to run a good time in the middle. I want to get at the front. I want to be there when the action happens, and I want to outkick everyone. That's what I want to do.
Well, if you're closing 27, I reckon you'll be a pretty good chance to win it if you're there with 200 metres to go.
I think running 12.71s is more like it.
Yeah.
That's what'll happen.
We'll talk about that before we leave the show tonight. We'll get a couple of predictions from Brad, see if he can improve his predictions from last week.
Mm-hmm.
Over to you, Mr. Croker. A bit sick at the end of this week, but a pretty consistent week leading into it. Full-time school teacher has beat you up.
Yeah, it has. It's been a bit of adjustment, that's for sure. But yeah, I had an easy week scheduled. So I came off the 36K on the Sunday, and Monday just went out for 11K. Felt pretty ordinary, but I guess that's to be expected off 36 the day before. Just another easy hour on Tuesday at sort of 4:13s. And then Wednesday was my, I guess, session.
Yeah.
Session for Wednesday was 5 2-minuters and 5 1-minuters. A minute sort of slow jog. And felt surprisingly good because I did that session at like 6:30 in the morning. So averaged like 3 minute Ks for the 2 minute efforts and about 2:50s for the 1 minute efforts, and you know, just jogging sort of 4:30 to 5 minute K pace. So yeah, felt good. 35 minutes in the Arvo. Then Thursday morning, got out 19K at 4:13. So that's a little bit shorter than what I normally do, sort of midweek long run. And then Friday, I started to get this like scratchy throat and just a bit of a tight chest. Like I wouldn't say I was sick, but something was definitely coming. And so I went for just 45 minutes or so on Friday afternoon, and I felt okay running, but I just didn't feel like I could breathe properly. And I just thought, look, there's no point, you know, banging out a hard park run the next day if I'm not 100%. So I ended up just jogging on Saturday for 65 minutes with Viv on the bike at 4:14. And I'm glad I did, because I sort of got a little bit worse. But then I actually reckon it's a really good topic we could cover maybe one week, is running when you're sick. Like, when is it not okay to run? Because I'm sort of in that point at the moment where I'm not bedridden, but I wouldn't say I'm 100%, and whether jogging's, you know, delaying the time it takes to get back to 100%, I'm not so sure. So Sunday I ended up getting out for, you know, 30K, ran with a couple of Dick Telford's boys, some of the guys that I didn't run with last week, so Hugh Williams and Dan Wallace. So that was pretty chilled at sort of 4:13s. And then I figured, because I had a pretty light week and didn't do anything hard since the Wednesday, that I would, you know, start up my Sunday doubles, because I want to get into, you know, some Sunday double runs between now and BWA. So got out for 35 minutes yesterday afternoon at 4:20s, and yeah, so the week was 135K. So disappointed I didn't get to do park run. Still not feeling 100% at the moment. So yeah, we'll see what happens this week. It's meant to be a pretty hard week this week, but I'll just play it by ear.
The old Brad would have ran park run, I reckon. You've wisened up.
Yeah, it's true. Like, generally, I would have been one to just go, you know what, it's on the program, like, I knew I wouldn't have run well. Like, you know that feeling I'm talking about where your chest is just tight, you're just not, like, you just can't breathe properly, and, yeah, and I've started coughing stuff up now, so it's sort of a good thing that I didn't race.
Yeah, yeah.
But having said that, it would have been nice to know where I was at too.
Are you on the garlic?
Yeah, I've been having a fair bit of garlic, yeah.
No, that only works if it's raw. We discussed this on the podcast.
Yeah, so...
You can't just have garlic bread. Okay?
No. Is out of the jar okay?
No, it's not. It has to be raw, and it has to be freshly crushed.
Okay.
You can either crush it in your teeth, or you can crush it and eat it straight.
All right, I'll do that, but Viv might make me sleep in the spare room.
Yeah, well, it's not in... The kids are going to hate you. It's going to be the worst month of your life, but it's going to be worth it. You'll get better.
Have you had time off work, or are you just motoring through?
No, so I went in today. Like, I'm not... That's the thing. It's like I'm not sick. Like, I can, you know, I still went out for a run today, but it's just I'm not 100%. So, just knowing, yeah, how hard to push this week, I'll just sort of, yeah, play it by ear a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, won't be taking any time off work. I'm not...
Yeah, right. You're cutting out a bit there, Brad, but hopefully we pick you up a bit coming up. Hopefully you get closer to the modem or whatever happens in Canberra. Any other questions for Brad, Julian?
Questions of Brad.
Happy with his training week? How'd the double Sunday go? First time.
Yeah, I'm interested in that. Still ran it fast, didn't he?
Yeah, it's all right. It was mainly downhill though. Yeah, so
you run to dinner at the in-laws.
No, I met Viv at the shops.
Parked at the top of the hill. Runs down it.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I felt amazing, but yeah, it was okay. I think the Sunday double is actually more of a mental thing, because I guess I'm so used to just putting the queue in the rack after a big Sunday morning and just going, all right, I'm done now till Monday, to then sort of get yourself up again. Whereas on a Saturday, I'm used to doing a double. It's just sort of the way that I've always trained. So I think it's more of just getting my head around having to go out again on Sunday. But yeah, like I didn't feel too banged up after it.
I'd take a Sunday double over Saturday double any day of the week.
No, I like a Saturday double.
Nah, it's too much stuff to do on a Saturday afternoon. Then you got the like that second run to try fit in. Whereas Sunday, you're getting ready for work and just like, yeah. No one's having like parties or anything on Sunday.
But you're popular and you want to be mayor. So you're out like pressing the flesh on a Saturday. Whereas I'm quite happy just to chill out.
Yeah, I suppose.
Chill out in your DCs and your Fox hoodie.
Very good. I'll get on to my week. Nothing really to report there. Pretty easy run on the Monday. Ran with Ben Pearson, a local guy in a Chukumoama. He's only been running probably the last 6 months, and it was his first run where it was probably warmer than 25-30 degrees, and he found that pretty hard. So we ran a couple of 5:15s towards the end there. Wasn't sure if he was going to make it, but thankfully we got back to the cars without him dying, but a good experience for him and his first ever hot running experience. Tuesday, I just jogged through because I did that half marathon on the Sunday, so I wanted to give my body extra day to recover. So I got out for 15K in the Arvo and 6K in the morning, which was good fun. What did I do Wednesday? I went to Melbourne for the day. So I went to Melbourne and back, and driving through Bendigo on the way home, just had super dark clouds over the distance where Echuca was, where I was in Bendigo. So I decided to do my session there, and session was 6 by 1 minute hard with 30 seconds float. So did that and ended up, and the coach pretty much said, whatever you do, wherever you're at with 9 minutes, make sure you get to 3K. So I thought I might have been pretty close to a 9 minute 3K, but I had to go a bit longer, and I think I ran 9:10 for the 3K. Just wasn't really feeling it. I was hoping to try, and I think I saw your session, Brad, and you were kind of running 2:50 pace for those 1 minuters, and I was thinking I might have been able to do pretty similar, but was a bit slower, and it just didn't feel real good. But kind of got the 3K done in 9:09, I think it was, 9:10, somewhere around there. So kind of positive, but at the end of the day, I had 3 days between Sunday and Wednesday and still wasn't feeling real great. What'd I do? Then I did just a 14K easy on Thursday morning. I was off to school camp, so kind of out at 5 o'clock in the morning. Went to school camp Thursday all day, and then Friday all day, and an easy 12K when I got home from school camp on Friday afternoon. School camp's hard. You been on school camp before, Brad?
I found running pretty hard.
You can't run. If something happens to one of the kids and they're like, where was the teacher? And you're like, yeah, he was out running. It's, you're never going to work again kind of thing. So, you just kind of got to put everything on hold for a couple of days. Lucky this was only a 2 day camp. Some of the like 3 or 4 day ones I've been on, you're really struggling. I'm the kind of guy that if I can't run, I kind of get a bit kind of irritated real easy and a bit moody and stuff. So, I was kind of a bit on edge Friday throughout the day. I'm pretty keen to get back into routine. Saturday was my main session for the week. So it was 3K with 3 minutes recovery and then 3 by 1K. And, went out the old Moama Industrial Estate, and with my mate Benny, he did the same session. His plan to try and hit a sub 19 5K by the end of the year. So he did the same session at his paces and I did them at mine. And coach wanted the 3K in 9 minutes and then the 1K is in 2:56. And then, ended up hitting an 8:48, a 2:50, 2:54 and a 2:49. And just one of those days that everything just felt pretty cruisy, and put the 4 percenters on again. I was kind of looking at my watch. I did a couple of strides in them before the session and was kind of running, 30-second 200s and felt really smooth. And, then I just went through the first K of the first, then that first 3K, and kind of hit a 2:52 and could kind of switch off a bit then and just cruise through it, kind of 2:58 pace, and still hit a pretty decent 3K. And then when the 1K is rolled around, it was quite easy as well. So I'd probably put that down to just the massive break. I didn't really do anything like 3K in between Sunday morning and Saturday morning the week later, so the legs were obviously fresh and ready to go. So hopefully I can feel similar to that on Thursday night when we get down to Melbourne for this 5K track race. Then Sunday, just a nice easy one thing I did do, I went to a wedding Saturday arvo and got a quick 30-minute jog in between the wedding and the reception. So had a couple of beers straight after the wedding, and then it was like a four-hour gap between the reception, and decided I reckon I could pull off a second run for the day. So went home, got out of the suit, got in the running gear, went for a 30-minute run and got back in the suit, then just rocked up to the reception. So, yeah, pretty productive with my time. I was pretty happy with that. And then just a easy 2 hours yesterday morning at 4:42 with me mate Benny. We just went out some back streets in Moama. That was pretty cruisy, just on the dirt most of the way. And then, I was in the spikes just yesterday afternoon, just seeing if they still fit and just seeing if I'll bother wearing them for Thursday night to just see how the legs pulled up today. So a bit of a soft week, 135. I probably missed 3 or 4 second runs, which hurt me a bit, and my sessions were a bit smaller. So that's probably why it's 135K week. But, yeah, pretty happy with the way things ended. But still super inconsistent. I just can't seem to have a week where everything's okay. It's rather pretty crappy sessions or really good sessions. But hopefully that comes.
I got a comment.
Oh dear. Here we go.
So, you know this industrial estate area you run in?
Yeah, Moama Industrial Estate, yeah.
Any tall buildings around there that could affect this GPS of yours?
Paddocks. One tall building, paddocks other than that. I'll send some photos for you. Well, you reckon my GPS is dodgy?
I reckon it. Yeah, well, I was looking at all these sessions throughout winter, coming into Berlin, hot favourite, popping off massive sessions, and thinking, shit, this guy's rolling. And then actually the thought appeared to me as I passed you at Berlin, I thought, that industrial state's short.
It did.
That is what's going on here.
If that come into your head at Berlin, I'd be so surprised. I must admit, I like training out there, but...
Yeah, generous. It's a generous corner.
What about you're the GPS man. What about, because it is like a big rectangle. So like how much does it go out when you take right-hand turns? That's the only thing, but there's some long straights out there.
Yeah. Does I'm not exactly much? Sure. Like you can definitely lose it. There's some spots that I do on some courses I do where I know when I turn that corner, I'm not speeding up or slowing down, but my watch is suddenly going to drop from running 3:10 to 3 minutes. And it's purely a GPS issue. And then when I come around another corner, it's going to go from like 3:05 to 3:15, all just in a matter of seconds, because somehow it hasn't picked up. You've turned the corner and all of a sudden it sort of thought you've gone straight or whatnot, but it does play with your GPS a bit.
Yeah, I have thought of that before, but the one good thing that we do out there is we've got the gutters spray painted. So it doesn't, like, even if it is short, say it's, 950 whatever for the K, we're always doing the 1K reps out there, or always doing the 3K reps out there. It's just, it's good to be able to compare, even if it's short, we're always comparing short to short. It's not like we do them anywhere else. But, I don't know, we've all got GPSs. We'll go out there with 3 or 4 guys now, different brand GPSs, they all bip at the same time, and we've got in the cars and tried to measure it, and, yeah, there's it's pretty barren. Like, it's an industrial estate, but there's like maybe, I don't know, 4 factories and then 50 vacant blocks. Like you can see from one, it's dodgy as out there. Like people were stealing my cones out there the other night, tradies, when they were knocking on work. Like that's how sketchy it is out there. Actually, on Saturday, we were out there and there was a guy like flying his aeroplane around the sky. And you know when they leave those like trails, like the mist in the background, you can kind of draw things in the sky. It was just drawing like a big penis and like testicles, and we thought that was pretty funny. So we're doing his session, and you look up, there's just like 2 testicles and a penis up in the sky, which is pretty cool. But I'll get my Chuka Moama guys to vouch for me. I'm pretty sure that they would. That it's no tall buildings, but we do have tight turns. But in saying that, the straights are like 1K long. So when you're out there, and
I love that Julian's just like kicked you while you're down. You sort of. You rattled off your week and you're saying how disappointed you've been in training, and then Julian's just made the sessions even worse by saying that it's all short.
No. Well, when I finished
that, possibly short.
Benny listens to the podcast, and we knew that Julian ran that like 9:52 or something, and I knew I was doing a 3K rep before the 1K. So like I was just like, even though the coach said 9 minutes, I'm like, if I can do this quicker than 8:52, I'll be very happy. And then when I had the chance to bang out some quick 1Ks, I'm like, well, that's the same. Can you remember before Berlin when I was doing like 10 by 1Ks in like 3 minutes? It's exactly the same start-finish line. So that's what it made.
Oh, yeah, I get it. I get that, like, you're doing it on the same course. I'm not disputing that you're running on a different course.
Yeah.
It's just...
same course, but yeah, if it's short, I'm running quicker 1Ks than I was before Berlin, but I'm only doing three of them. But it felt good. Those 4%ers are good. I know there was like a study that came out this week saying how like it's scientifically proven that they make you run better. Whenever I put them on, I just seem to, like, I was going through the 400 meter mark in like 65 and it just felt like I was jogging. I don't know. It just, they're good shoes. Get to the factory.
I reckon you're getting a bit hard on yourself. I reckon you just need to train and I don't know. Don't get hung up on the time so much. I reckon you're going okay.
Well, I reckon I need to go back to two sessions a week. I was trying to do three and I just wasn't recovering in time, whereas I'd be happy with two good sessions a week rather than trying to get that third one in.
Like a sub nine minute 3K in training on just roads is quick. Like
by myself. Like I tried to get some pace maybe out there on bikes, but I couldn't pull them
exactly
together in
time. It's like 9:15 is probably quick enough at the moment. Like it's quick, you know, I just think you're putting too much pressure on yourself.
Yeah. Fresh as a daisy, though. You've got to be. I was pretty fresh. I only ran once, like, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But anyway, be right. See what... Well, actually, no, because we're on a measured track on Thursday night. See what that kind of equates to. See what happens there. Rightio. Some running news, boys. Let's get through the week in running. What do you got for me, Julian? NCAAs over in the States?
Yeah, so all the divisions had their national cross-country meets, which is, like, well... I feel like it's the meet that I'm most interested in with college running is the national cross country because it's such a big race. The guys, they're not girls. They're not just running for themselves. They run for their school, and which is basically their family who they've lived with, trained with, gone to school with, done everything with for the last however long they've been at that school. Sometimes it's 5 years. So there's a lot of passion involved and there's like all you need to do is watch the finish line and the guys and girls coming over the line just collapsing because every single time they pass someone, that's a point they're earning or it's a place they're gaining for their school and their teammates. So basically the way that this cross country works is – over here is that they have about, I think it's seven runners and the top five scorers, I'm going to say the top five, might be top six, but they score points based on their place and the lowest score wins. So you can have guys who might have a team that have the top three in the race, but if your four, five and six is down like 90th, 100th and 150th, then you probably won't win the team's event. The guys, it's more about consistency through the team. So it's really interesting to watch. I love watching it, especially because cross country, like splits don't matter. No one needs to wear a watch. It's all about going as hard as you can to the finish line or racing as well as you can. And this year, it was in Indiana and it was in Kentucky this year. Okay.
Did you ever run NCAAs when you were over there?
No, I only did track. I was only there for track, and I never qualified for anything. So I was a bit, I was no good. But I would have liked to do this. I reckon this looks really fun. But it was really windy, so it made racing even harder. I actually only had a chance to watch the men's race. And it was a great race, like this two guys from Northern Arizona, which is where Dave McNeil went, Ben Ashkettle, Matthew Kohler. These guys, like, they've got a strong Australian. I think, is that where Lyndon Hall went as well? I'm not sure. But it's where Australia, a bit of Australian background there, which was cool. They had two guys. One was a New Zealander, and the other guy, I don't know where he's from, probably American, but he they just went hard from the gun, and it was cool to watch. They just went to the front and just did work for the entire 10K. Guy called Justin Knight, Canadian guy from Syracuse, he outkicked them. After there was a big break about halfway, or just before halfway, by a Kenyan who runs for Alabama. He got reeled in, dropped, and then it was the NAU guys and the Syracuse bloke who had a three-way kick to the finish with the Justin Knight winning. I love watching it. It's great. And then in the ladies, Kenyan one called Edna Kurgat. She's from University of New Mexico. So I think they're out of Albuquerque, pretty high up altitude school, just like NAU is as well. So it's interesting to see the altitude schools versus the flatland schools, because they always they seem to always compete like at no altitude. she won by 30 seconds or something like that. I think she won by a fair bit. The race was again strong. One of the girls that I like to follow, Ali Ostrada.
Oh, yeah, she was a young kid, like prodigy, wasn't she?
Yeah, she's from Alaska. That's and it. I remember she did this run. She's won the I think it was the Mount Marathon, which is this really cool race in Seward in Alaska. And I remember watching her early win that or do well in that, and thought, oh, I'm going to follow this chick. And she just turned into it. She's amazing, but she didn't have that good of a race. That was the NCAAs for the week. For the year, really.
Pretty good stuff. Hey, you read Running with the Buffaloes?
Yeah, several times.
How good is that? It just gives you such a good feel of what, because it's so much better than our current scene here in Australia.
Well, that's right. But we're a lot more selfish in our pursuits. So
they'd take a bullet for each other, those guys.
Yeah, and I think if we were going to school or we were younger and that was our sport, team sport, which it is, we would be a lot more like that. Like I tried to get that culture going with Geelong Cross Country, where we work for each other. And in order for that to happen, you have to train with one another. You have to socialise. You have to be more like a family or a group of mates than just random runners on a sheet. So Lee Troop got it going in Geelong. The first, he established this great culture in the club. He made it special to run for Geelong. And then Brett Coleman came along and did exactly the same thing, fostered a group down there. And he put a lot of it was a privilege to run for Geelong in that first division, and you really had to earn your spot. And then when you would go up, you would all travel up together and you would travel home together. You would train Tuesdays, do long run Sundays. It was almost like a college team atmosphere in that you were spending a lot of time with each other, and you really – that's how you run better in those races. That's how you go from 13th to 9th late is by thinking about what it can do for your team. I got a chance to take over after Brett stopped and did exactly what they tried to do, or I tried to do it. And you ran one race, I think in the season we won the premiership, and it's probably still one of my running highlights, winning the premiership in Athletics Victoria cross country.
Yeah, I'm with you. You used to go down and, like, you knew your spot was on the line if you didn't perform. Like, I only get there one time that year, but I think the year before, like, maybe Sandown Relays and Gels Park and three or four races there. And it was, back when, I was trying to get to a lot of them, which was really good. And really good culture and really good people around that Geelong team. And, you're spot on. Like, it was a privilege, and you knew if you didn't run well, you were going to get dropped and run in the next division.
Exactly. And
Craig Mottram's passing over.
You're tagging Mottram, and he's passing it on to Brenton Rowe, and then he passes off to Scott Rantel or Mark Fountain even. Like, it was a big deal.
It was.
And, I was never, ever more nervous than I was at those races when I knew that there was four or five other blokes who were relying on me to do a job.
Yeah, I was cacking myself one time. Watron passed it to me at Jales Park Relays, and I had to chase down Risley on the last leg, and it was just, didn't get him. I nearly got him in the end, but far out. Watron was just giving me an earful about pulling him in and stuff, and yeah, it was, and what an experience for us guys to be able to be involved in that.
Yeah, I'll cherish it. It was great, and I've got a couple. I actually, you'll be pretty happy about this, but yeah. I've found your T-shirt.
Oh, thanks. I can do a product review on it when it arrives. Nah.
Oh, you got to pay. The reason I didn't send it, because you didn't, like, they were for free, and I wasn't going to send it out of my own money.
Yeah, especially when I only ran one race that season. I felt like a bit of a dog bloke wearing the premiership singlet when you've ran one 15K race.
But we did keep it for you, so...
Good work.
There you go.
Mind you, I did come third in that race, I think. Would have got some good points.
Probably selfish runner.
Could have won. No, well, it goes back to the question that maybe we have too much on these days, and I'm sure those guys in the university NCAAs, that's all they race for the season. Like, they're not trying to run marathons or fun runs or track races or state 5K champs. Like, their big A races are NCAAs the whole way through.
Yeah, exactly. They'll only race a few times.
Yeah. Brad, what news story you got for me? What do you got?
Yeah, well, I guess speaking of running culture, you know, you've chatted about the NCAAs and the running culture in Geelong, but Japanese running has a massive running culture, especially over the marathon and the half marathon. And there's this race every year. I think it's called the Ageo Half, and the depth in that race is just ridiculous. So it was won in 61:25 by Simon Kariuki, and second place was Patrick Wambui in 61:37. But they had 239 runners under 69 minutes, which is just phenomenal. So, to put it in context, so 10th place was 63:22, which, what's Gold Coast normally won in?
Yeah.
About that? Like, yeah. Then you've got 50th place, 64:43. 100th place, 65:40. 150th place, 66:46, and 200th, 67:53. So you're pretty much getting 50 people through every minute from like 63 minutes onwards, which is just ridiculous.
Crossing the line every second.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is university. This isn't their pros. This is like their best university championships.
And I guess I'll just mention as well, Yuki. He finished 17th in that race in 63:35, but this was after he'd run consecutive weekends, two hours 15 for two marathons the two previous weekends before this race.
Hang on, how did Yuki run if it's a university race?
I think, well, they have invitation. Like, I think it's called a university race, but other people, you know, other people can run in it.
Okay. They're not all 19-year-old beauty students.
Yeah, so what about Yuki, eh? 2:15 one weekend, 2:15 the next, and then a 63.5.
Insane. Insane.
That is incredible, though. Like, that. Yeah. What are we doing wrong?
And that's why I think both of my marathons next year are going to be in Japan, just because it's close to home, and, like, there's so many guys that run fast there, you know? Like, my heart, I would have been, like, what, 200th in that race, so... there's plenty of guys around two hours 20 for the marathon, so yeah, I think I'll go there next year.
Yeah.
They'd
go out insane too, wouldn't they? All be at like 62 minute pace as well, and just pop and end up running 66s.
Yeah, I think that's part of their culture as well. So I think if you go over and run a marathon there, you sort of stick to your own sort of pace schedule and then try and run through the packs, I suppose.
Yeah.
Once they start to pop. And I guess my other little bit of news is ACT based. So Sean Crichton, who is the current Australian steeplechase record holder with 8:16, he jumped on the track for the first time in over a decade on the weekend for 3K and ran 9:09 in flats. Wow. Which, I think it's about 10 seconds off the over 50 Australian record. So he's looking
to break that.
I'm not actually sure, but I know he's looking to break the 5K and the 10 over the next couple of months. So,
do you know what they are?
Yep, so I think the 5 is like 1540 odd.
He'll get that, easy.
Yeah, and the 10 is 32 high.
Is that Monna?
No, it's not. Because I asked Monna in, when I saw Monna overseas, I asked him whether he had that, and he said he didn't. So, but yeah, so he can still run.
Is he running Steigen? Sure. Is that where he's going to do the 10K?
Yeah, he's entered Steigen, yeah.
Yeah. Good.
So, talent doesn't go away, does it?
It's insane, isn't it?
That's incredible. Well, it's like actually talking to Monna tonight about that, about Sean's run, and he was impressed.
He's just so versatile, though. Like, I reckon if you look back at, because he's on Strava, if you look back and look at his last year, I reckon he's run over 30K just about every single Sunday. And some of his runs are like 36K every Sunday. He's just, and he trains really, really smart. He's a guy that'll, all his recovery runs are like close to 5-minute Ks.
He's so smart.
Coming from a boy that runs 4:10s every day.
Yeah.
No, you're getting better, Brad. You're getting better.
Yes. Yeah.
Hey, point to pinnacle.
So that's my news.
Yeah, good news. And I liked your segue. Your segue was like perfect, talking about culture, straight into the Japanese thing. Ever since you've done that interview with Trav, you've really stepped up a bit, I feel.
No, I've been teaching my year eights about cultural significance at the moment, so thought I'd use that.
Point to pinnacle down at Tassie, big race. It's got grown in status a bit. That's what I'm going to cover this week, thanks to Andy Allison. He was on the ground and he sent us through a report to discuss. And Dylan Evans won it for the fourth time in 127.22. Sam Crowther, second in 130.49. And Stu Gibson is an ultra runner that now from Scotland, now lives in Hobart in 133.55. Hot day, was hovering around 28 degrees down there, and the hardest, or they're calling it the toughest half marathon in the world. $2,000 to the winner, had 3,500 people in the two events because they also do the point to pub 10K as well. And the elevation of that half marathon is 1,300 metres. So you think about Falls Creek being at about 1,500 metres. It's not a bad kind of climb that these guys are doing and still running under an hour and a half for half marathon, well under 127.22. The women's side, Miriam Duhali, I pronounced that wrong, 138.52. She's a first-time winner, 19 years old, type 1 diabetic as well, and does a lot of work for refugees over there down there in Tassie. So I think she donates her prize money and stuff, Andy was telling me. So really keen to get her on the show and a bit of a chat with her. I've seen her run a couple of fun runs down there, and it'd be good to get her on there. Kate Pedley was second, and Elizabeth Humphreys a few minutes back. She won quite easy, got 2 minutes up on Kate, and then 14 minutes in front of Elizabeth. So pretty good event down there. Not sure if you boys come across any of the videos. Did you see the video that's been going around on Facebook kind of reflecting the day?
No, I haven't.
Oh, check it out. Like drone footage and real HD and good music in the background. And I know they've got something to do with their Movember fundraising kind of ambassadorship kind of for the race down there. They had a Mobros kind of section where they waited up the top until every runner crossed the finish line, which took about 4 hours. So they were up there and raising money for Movember, which is pretty cool. From what I know, Dylan led the whole way. Alan Craigie, I think you know Alan pretty well. Brad, you do a bit of running with him in Canberra. Did you race him at Canberra Marathon?
Yeah, raced him Canberra.
Yeah.
That's his debut, I think.
Him and Stu went with Dylan Easy early and then dropped off at the 9K mark, and Sam judged it beautifully and picked off those two boys to finish second. So, quite a interesting race, and I don't know, it just seems to be growing more and more in profile, and I know they're putting a bit of work into it down there, and I don't know if it'd be fun running up a mountain for 21K, but maybe definitely a bucket list kind of thing going forward. What about you boys, Keen?
It's been on my bucket list to do for a while.
Mm.
The money's good.
$2,000, that's a return flight to Berlin next year.
Yeah, the money is good down there.
I think pacing would be the hardest thing, knowing that, you know, you, because you're running uphill for an hour and a half, just not cooking yourself early.
Yeah.
Would you go on heart rate, or what would you do? Because you're no good looking at your GPS.
Yeah.
You go on feel. That's when you got to learn to feel it.
No fear out the industrial state, mate. We just go fast out there.
Yeah. You know, Stu Gibson's not just an ultra runner. You slagged him off as an ultra runner, but really he's a sub-29, 10K guy, sub-4 miler. I think he's run 2:18. And he's come third down there.
Yeah, send all those complaints through to Andy Allison for his race report, because he just has an ultra runner from Scotland who now lives in Hobart. So send ultra those through runner. To Andy. Don't send them through to me. I stuff this stuff up all the time.
That is a stiff description of a bloke who's gone under 4 minutes in the mile.
Andy mustn't have known that. I'm sure he would have put that in there. Rough. If he knew it. Thank you to Andy, though, for taking some time out to put a running report together for us for Inside Running Podcast. Did you guys see this new dilly? No, not New Dilly. Dally half marathon.
Peaked at it. No.
Yeah, Almaz Ayana, the gun from the Rio Olympics and the London World Champs on the 10K track. She's a 29:17 10K runner, making her debut. A bit of interest around that, and she came out and ran 67 minutes and 11 seconds. Thoughts?
How much did she win by?
Not much, like 15 seconds or something.
Yeah.
If she ain't running 64 like those other girls, that's where it's at these days on the ladies' side.
Yeah, but she's
probably just a Sunday long run for her.
Yeah, yeah, they do throw a bit of cash out there, I think. That's why she's there. Yeah. It was won by the blokes in under 60.
I wouldn't take that as that's the best she's capable of.
It's actually interesting seeing her run it, because she doesn't usually run anything other than these major championships and comes out and smashes everyone.
Yeah, times it right. That's what we call that, timing it right.
We could go on all different tangents here, I think, but I think we'll just leave that one there. Hey, Julian, you got a quick update. Have you spoken to Blake after his impressive seventh over in the North Face 50 mile?
He was bloody fourth with 10 miles to go, and he got passed a few times and obviously finished in seventh, but that was a cracking race from him. Blokey beat Max King, who's something like I think he's about an 8:20 steeplechaser, 2:14 marathoner. So that's the kind of blokes that he was beating.
Yeah, it's pretty quality.
Pretty bloody good.
How's he feeling? Yeah. Have you spoken to him?
I spoke to him after the race, immediately after. So he's probably still in a bit of a high, but he was stoked with the fact that he put it all out there. He knows that he's not, like, doing the work that those other guys are doing. One of them, guy who won, I think, second, came off a 240K week, and they're just doing some crazy stuff. And he's just been training consistently, so he's stoked to get the result he did with a pretty gentle lead-up, we'll call it.
Yeah, good signs. Yeah. Did it pay down to, like, 10th? What did he get?
Top three only, actually. They paid at top. Then nothing, but he's all right. He's over there. He's going to have a few weeks on holiday now and just refresh, I guess. Going to Flagstaff, stay with another ultra buddy he knows there.
Check out some animals.
Flagstaff. What do they have?
They have some wild animals for sure.
Rattlesnakes. Yeah, no, I'm sure he'll seek something out there.
That's good. Hey, you got some more for me?
I've just got, I might as well discuss it now because it's something that's been on my mind. I'm having trouble not just getting it out there. I've had trouble all week just not calling you out on it. But I got this email the other day, and Brad now has it too. So I forwarded it on to Brad. It's a good one. It was a feedback email. Yeah, you sent that to me, and then I sent that to Brad. And, all relevant points. This is about that. It's about what happens when you scroll to the very bottom of the email.
Elite runner.
I'm going to do it right now. It says,
www.bradytrelfall.com.
On the bottom, this email was sent to you by Brady Threlfall, elite distance runner. www.bradytrelfall.com.
Yeah, I've had that just in case. Years. I better change that to sub-elite. That was before.
I
was
the person that you were sending the email to, maybe didn't realize that you were an elite distance runner. Now they do. So,
yeah, I've been using that for years. Well, when I do like guest speaking roles up here to like some school kids and stuff, when the teachers email me, I just like to be a bit professional in my response, and just if they ask me to come in as an elite athlete, like to keep that on the bottom. Is that all you got? I thought you were going to have something way worse than that.
Oh, mate, I would be plenty embarrassed.
Professionalism, Spence. You got to start stepping up. I've told you about this.
How about you, Brad? Would that be embarrassing?
You've just promoted his website.
Yeah, I know. He's going to get all this. Oh, I don't think... Moama Bowling Club, they're probably sick of hearing the same old speech.
Nah, I've only done that one there once, Moama Bowling Club. You go to schools and go to, like, AGMs. And yeah, mate, it's different world in the country. You got to... there's not many athletes around, so you got to try and, I think when you train as much as we are and very little people are going to, promote you in mainstream media, you got to do your best to try and promote yourself to make the most of some opportunities.
Oh, I get what you're going for. I just think it's hilarious.
Nah, that's not on my school email. That's just on my personal email account that's linked to my website. But
Just your mates when you send it through to your mates and stuff.
Yeah, just forwarding.
Just to remind them. Hey guys, elite distance runner. Send in it.
So when you email Mona to try and get Mona on the show, make sure you leave that in there.
Well, sometimes I delete it on the bottom. Like, depends on the emails. I'm like, nah, I've got to get rid of this on the bottom here. It actually depends on who it goes to. Yeah, right. Yeah, this is why I've got a few more sponsors than you boys, I reckon.
Sponsors.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
All right. Sorry about that. I just thought it was funny. Yeah. Obviously, it's a very serious subject for you.
No, it's not serious at all. I just think that's, I don't know, in a small community when you're the only kind of middle distance runner getting around and you're getting elite starts at some of these races, I reckon you got to, let the people know that you're pretty serious about your sport, and because they're kind of asking you to present yourself in that way and they're putting funding towards you and giving you opportunities.
Just ham it up a bit.
Yeah, well, I didn't know this sub 220 rule before I made that signature, did I? we're right to move on. You got anything else?
No, that's it. That was.
Did you check out the website?
No, but I might later.
Yeah, I'll check it.
I'm going to laugh about it.
Jeez, if you're laughing about the signature on the bottom of the email, you'll be cacking yourself about the seriousness of the website.
I'm going to look at it right now. But anyway, let's move on.
Yeah. Listener question, Sammy McLean, good one. Hypothetically speaking, given your closeness in running PBs from 5K to the marathon, along with your similar coaching methodology and ideas around how to best prepare for a marathon, do you think you, if you all lived near each other, would you make good training partners? Or would each session just turn into a ding-dong battle between Brady and Julian with Brad playing the mediator? Good question.
Well, I think I've been playing mediator already tonight. I'd probably be in between. I'd be stopping Julian from bullying you, probably.
But not when it comes to running stuff. I reckon you jog way quicker than Julian and I, so we'd be telling you to slow down a lot. I don't know how I'd go training with two people similar. Like, I do 90% of my running, like, by myself. I don't know if I'd like two people with similar PBs. It'd be good for sessions and stuff, but I like my personal space and just going around by myself.
I think we could all benefit from it, in that, like, I would slow down probably some of my easy runs. We'd probably make you just chill out a bit more in sessions and just go, you don't have to run 9 minutes for this 3K, let's run 9:20, which might be a good thing for you. I think there would be benefits.
I'd love sharing reps. Sharing reps would be my big thing. I'd love doing that.
I actually think that that Brad and I would probably be quite good together, because we don't try to hammer everything we do. I think you're a lot more focused on splits, and you would struggle maybe in a group environment, like with others around who are running your pace, because you really want to hit those splits. And I don't think Brad and I are that focused on that. And I think we would probably be a little bit more relaxed. I just get the impression that you're really I'm going to take someone else's words, but intense at hitting splits in every workout.
Mm. Who said that? Who called me intense?
Brad.
Oh, Brad. Thanks, Brad. Yeah, I think it's probably it's probably years and years of training by yourself and only having you and your stopwatch that kind of makes that, kind of that mindset that you get so fixated on the watch more than how you feel. I hope I'm trying to get better at it. It's definitely something I'm aware of. But I think because you're always on, like you've got to be on every rep because there's no one to kind of sit behind and chill out with and just kind of hand over some of the control.
Yeah, but it almost feels like, you know, if you run 9:02 for a 3K instead of 8:59 in training, that it's a complete failure when physiologically you've got the same benefit out of it, probably more because you've gone a bit slower. So you seem to gauge the session purely on the splits as to whether it's a good or bad session, even if they're only within like a couple of seconds, if you're a couple of seconds off, which is not a lot.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I'm learning a bit about this.
Yeah.
Fair comment, Julian.
Yeah, I think it's a fair comment, and you don't really let this isn't a beat up on Brady. This is just how I would feel if I was training with you. Is that you don't? I don't think you sort of adjust for weather conditions as well, or like, you know how you're always trying to attribute something to you always try to attribute something in your training to something else. Like, oh, I had a great 3K and I belted out a great session. But that was because I was fresh, or I was tired in this workout and it was because of this. So I was did a long run or something. It's like it's probably too analytical for how I would like to look to be.
Yeah, just go out there and do it kind of stuff.
Yeah, and then just put it in the bank, come back next week, do your next session, rather than like assessing your exact fitness at any given stage based on the session.
It'd be interesting to see, how that would work with other people around, I reckon, because, you're right, I do look into things a bit too much and kind of you get in your own head a bit as well when you're doing a lot of your work by yourself and you're thinking about that because then you're doing your jogs and your warm-up and your warm-down stuff by yourself that you get into it a bit more.
That's cool. I agree. And training with someone, even if they're not like your training partner, like they're your training partner but they're not running the same pace as you, you can really gauge whether it's an easy night to run or not. If they go, oh, I'm struggling tonight, I can't hit what I wanted to, you're like, oh, shit, neither can I. Oh, that's all good. Whereas if you're there by yourself, you're like, oh, what's going on? It's terrible, I'm struggling here. And you don't have anyone else to kind of just, I guess, let you know it's okay.
Yeah, I reckon I'm better at that with jogs, though. Like, I'll go with jogs with mates, and we might go 4:45 or 4:50s or whatever, and I'll just be like, you're up to easy long run. If it's a bit too slow, just go with it rather than getting fixated and being 5 minutes up the road and running by yourself with somebody else running by themselves 5 minutes back. But, yeah, just got to probably convert that to sessions in a way.
Yeah. All right.
Good question.
That's a good answer. I reckon that's a good question, yeah.
Yeah, no one's training with me. I'm just keeping solo by the sound of things. Imagine some of those big, like, 5x5K sessions and stuff. Just taking, like, one each. One
that
each.
That would be good.
Race the last two.
It also, I think, why we get tougher doing it on our own.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Gear review. Steig and Singlet. You worn it, Brad?
Yeah, I wore it this afternoon.
Yeah, massive thanks to Steigen for these singlets. I saw them on Julian's running company Ballarat Facebook page the other week, and yeah, instantly I think fell in love with just the cut, and it just seems like they're like nothing else that I've ever seen before in a running singlet. It's a bit kind of elite kind of race day singlet, and then a bit like Galen Rupp cut holes in the front of your singlet and kind of have a bit of air coming through, and it was a bit of a combination of all. What'd you think, Brad?
I loved it. It by far the best singlet I've ever had. When I unpacked it, it was wrapped up in like a tissue paper, and I took the tissue paper off and had the tissue paper in one hand and the singlet in the other, and it almost weighed the same. Like, it's just such a light singlet. So when it was about 25 degrees this afternoon when I ran, and like it just felt like I didn't even have it on. It's just so light, and yeah, like generally when I'm racing, I like to go as light as I can from those shoes, socks, singlets. So yeah, loved it.
Yeah, good, good. What colour did you get?
I got yellow.
Yeah, I got the same one. And I loved also the cut at the back. Like, you know how it's like real skinny down the back, and like all both shoulder blades are kind of like showing, and it's kind of got a good cut under the, well it's a different cut. So I haven't experienced a cut like that before under the underarm pits, and just like, yeah, just flowed really good.
And even the material, like it's just, I don't know, like, yeah, like what is it made out of?
I don't know. It feels like you're going to rip it. Like I took mine off after my session. I'm like, oh, am I going to rip this? It just seems so light, but still durable. Like I've taken it on and off 3 or 4 times. It's been through the wash a couple of times.
Well, that's why I sort of compared it to the tissue paper that it was wrapped in, because it's just so, yeah, it's so light.
Mm.
Yep. Good on you. Buy them at the running company, Ballarat.
What do you think, Julian? Do you like them?
Well, I've worn it for a long time, actually. These actually aren't that new. They've been out for ages. They just never really sold them commercially, I guess. So I've had one for a while, maybe last summer. And, yeah, I love the exposed shoulder area where you've got total range. But I'm not a big singlet wearer, to be honest. Like, I always have the saying, if it's warm enough for a singlet, it's warm enough for no singlet.
Yeah.
So I just don't wear anything.
Yeah, but in a race, you have to wear a singlet. So that's where...
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that's where I
wear the running company stuff. Like, it's either club shirt or the running company. Like, I like the singlet. Don't get me wrong. Great singlet. Awesome. That's why I stocked it. We only sell stuff that basically passed the Bree and Julian would wear it test.
Get the logo printed on that Steigen singlet, though, going forward?
Oh, I could do, for sure. But it's, like I said, they weren't really selling that many of them. So I might do that. Mm. That's a good idea, actually.
Mm.
Yeah.
Ideas, man. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. I'll send you one.
Yeah, it'd be good. I'll wear it. I must say a big thanks to Dom as well. He kind of, I'm not sure if he messaged you, Brad, but kind of got your measurements to make sure we're getting the right sizes and stuff. So customer service from Steigen was spot on there, making sure we got the right ones. But even getting them in the envelope, like mine was just sitting at the front door when I got home one day, and it felt like there was just like a piece of paper in there. Did not weigh anything.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Good. Running company Ballarat, if you want a Steigen singlet. What are they retailing for, Julian?
They're $80, but for summer, they also include a pair of Steigen socks. So that could be the perfect Christmas gift.
Yeah, but could be, couldn't it?
There are two choices in colour, black on black, basically, and then a yellow with a black Steigen label. They'll be there. They'll be there all of December.
Mm. Do you reckon, what do you have to do? Do you have to wear uniforms down at Steigen 10K, or you're allowed to wear what you want?
Oh, yeah. Dom actually asked if we would wear the Steigen singlets.
I'd be keen to wear one.
Yeah, well, wear it.
Yeah, but I'm not. You know, you gotta have like AV numbers and club singlets and stuff like that.
Oh,
like,
I'm not gonna get DQ'd. I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not that. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure they won't kick Ryan Gregson out for wearing his Nike shirt.
True.
So, if one person is allowed to do it, then they can't have one rule for one person and a rule for a different person just because they run slower.
Mm.
If Steigen fly me down, I'll wear it.
Oh, they've already given you a singlet, mate. Is that the most you've ever got from running in your life?
Pretty much.
Too far, Brad. Too far. I would have loved to be racing you down there. It'd be good if we were all in the one race. Still hasn't happened.
No.
Runner's rant.
Oh, it did. Berlin. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Just remind us, how'd that go again?
I was first.
Yeah.
All right. Runner's rant. Yeah, good.
Moose on the loose again. We're renaming the segment, I reckon. Moose on the loose.
Well, this was I had this subject in my mind Saturday in the middle of my session, and I thought, geez, this me getting angry here, this is the perfect topic for Moose on the Loose, because I'm starting to get enraged as I run around the lake. And it sort of feeds off last week's segment, which was runners that see themselves too high at a start and with no intention of running the pace that they're lining up with, basically, and they clog the start lines or the first 5K of a big event. This is on a similar etiquette-based rant, I guess. We also had a bit of a suggestion too from a listener, Stephen, who said, "Hey, I was at the track, saw these things going on. I got mad. I thought you might get mad too." And I did get mad because I experienced it twice this week. So the first rant, Saturday morning, running around the lake. This is a tan track. I'm sure most country towns have some sort of tan track. If you don't, imagine it's like the Botanical Gardens, 3.8K around. Every town has one. But there is clearly traffic on the track. So this was a Saturday morning. A lot of walkers, dogs, bikes, prams. Now, this is all fine. I am not having a go at people using the track. But if these
got to be careful
track users, if they cannot understand that there's a two-way system, similar to how a road operates, where cars drive on the left and they only pass on the right and come back to the left, then there's going to be carnage out there, especially at the start of summer when everyone starts to get out there. And that's exactly what was happening. There was teams of people with looked like three dogs each, totally across the path, blocking it for every single user, and the dogs lunging, and the people have earphones in so they don't know if you're coming behind them or not. They can't respond to you calling out. You've got kids on bikes that are just tearing all over the track right in front of you. You've got dogs off leash. And to be honest, probably the worst offender are the groups of older ladies who walk in about 10 wide, 3 deep, and it's so selfish. They take the entire path up. No one can get around. You have to kind of go through them, but you don't want to be rough, and they just don't understand, or they don't respect other track users. And it's, to me, like, I'm really cautious when I'm out there walking the dog. I'm like, oh, I don't want to get – this dog shouldn't get in the way. Like, these guys are out here using the path just as I'm using the path. I should be respectful. They should be respectful. I'll stay on the left, too wide, leave a gap for someone to pass on either side. Like, shit, this is pretty simple stuff, but it's so it's so common everywhere you go. I'm not sure if you guys have the same thing where you guys run.
I get what you're saying with the track, because the track's a place of high performance and that. But if you're
I'm not talking about the track. I'm talking about the lake.
Yeah. But I'd probably, you know, if you're fanging around the lake or the tan at 3:10s, is that the best spot to be running 3:10k pace when you know it's going to be that busy and there's old ladies out there with their dogs going for their evening walk that have no idea about they know about etiquette, but they don't know about how fast you're approaching and what you're actually trying to do and get out of yourself in that session? Like, do you just pick somewhere else?
This is simple etiquette. Like, this could be a person who's walking one way who is not moving for a person walking the other way. Like, this isn't, this guy's doing a session, we better get out of the way for him. This is seriously, let's just stay to the left of the track. That's all that, if everyone stayed to the left of the track, we're happy. No complaints. Being an elitist, this is just another track user.
I do like those tracks. We got one of those paths in Echuca. It's got the lines down the middle on the bike track. That's always good.
That is the key.
You get the idiot lines. The lines. And you need signs at both ends of the track saying keep left, kind of, unless so. Our park runs pretty much ran on that system, an out and back course on a bike track with the lines down the middle, and you never cross over. It's pretty
drive
much
on the left in Australia. That's the sign line. You see.
The lines don't always work though, because where I do a lot of my sessions and my park run at Yerribee Pond, that has a bike path with the line down the middle. And like, even on Wednesday morning, I was doing hard 2-minute and 1-minute efforts. And here are two different dog owners that decided that they would meet up right in the middle of and basically be on both lanes, and while their dogs just sort of chill out and get to know each other. I was just like, well, where are we meant to go?
Yeah, good. Yeah. Mm. And that's not, like, that's not them going, oh, have a look at this bloke speeding towards us, it's dangerous. You could have been anybody. You could have been an old lady walking. How are you going to get around? You can't.
And and it's also a bike path, so people are actually commuting. Need to use the path. So
And then okay, so that's pretty clear. I don't think we'll get many complaints about that one. But then the second one is track, and this is where it gets a bit contentious. The athletics track is a funny place. Back when we were running in Geelong a lot earlier, we would never get the more general groups of people on. It would always just be athletes, really, like runners, groups of runners, and track and field athletes, basically. So you would get – everyone would know their place, I guess. If you were doing a hard rep, you would kind of wait to the track. The longer distance guys are cleared maybe and then you got out and you passed them in lane two. These days, like for instance, down at the track in Geelong on Thursday night, triathlon group doing a fartlek session in lane one. And, you know, a fartlek includes jogging, which means for half the time, basically, the athletes are jogging in lane one. And we're trying to do a time trial. There was another group there who was a fast group who were doing maybe 300 reps. Those guys are trying to run really fast, but they have to go around groups of people jogging in lane one and two. So that's not on, in my mind. Like, if you're going to jog on a track, you go to lane seven or eight, or you jog on the infield. And the other thing down at the track as well is when they jump out in front of you when you're in the middle of a rep. So this is, again, pure etiquette. You look behind you if you're going to step out. There's several times during the time trial we're running along and up ahead of us, oh, we're going to start our rep in lane one and we're going to run 5 seconds per 200 slower than you. So you're basically just going to force me or why. Everyone will have experienced this, I reckon, and this is probably a little bit less general, more specific to runners. But yeah, track etiquette for me is a bit of a sticking point. I like to inform people too afterwards. Hey guys, probably don't jog here. If you're going to do a hard rep, great, jump in lane one. If you're going to jog, get the hell out.
Moose on the loose for another week.
You've done some damage tonight. The moose
is not happy.
Nah. This is just annoying me.
Quite aggressive all night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm feeling like I've worn a lot of it as well, to be honest. For all I've done for him over the years, and now I'm getting this treatment.
You're lucky I didn't read your website before we started recording tonight.
Professionalism, that's all I'm saying. Rightio, that's a good rant. I agree with you. I agree with you about the track more than the road stuff, because I do think people live in their own little worlds and are just selfish and have no idea whatsoever to stick to the left and the right. And yeah, maybe more signage be good, but it's still not going to help some people out there. That's it. What's on this week, Brad? You going to have a park run hit out or what?
Nah, so we'll can park run now till my next easy week, which will be a month. So weekend before Christmas will be park run. So this week, hopefully 100 miles with sort of a 16-minute fartlek tomorrow, 2 hours on Wednesday, some 8-minute efforts on Friday, and then 32K on Sunday with a 5K surge at the end of it. Ooh. So it's a big week, but it'll obviously depend on how quickly I get over my little sickness.
Yeah, it's a big boy week. Have you got like a time trial or anything planned?
Well, that'll be so I'll basically just go another three weeks now of like solid work with lots of hills actually, and then I'll have like an easier week and then I'll do park run. So I don't need to do a time trial at the moment. I'm 15 weeks out from a marathon, so I'll see where I'm at weekend before Christmas.
23rd, same day as Steigen.
Oh, sorry, no, weekend, the one before. One before that, yeah.
The weekend before, the week before.
Yeah.
Julian, B-grade 5K, Thursday night, state champs.
It's on. It's on.
What are you doing tomorrow night before it?
Nothing. Massage, freshen up, blood bag.
Shaving down?
I'm looking pretty good at the moment.
Yeah.
Shaved last week.
Oh, do you shave legs every week? Like every couple of weeks?
No. Just when the sun comes out and I want to get a little bit more brown.
Here we go. What time are you going to run, Brad? Who's going to win?
I'm going to go 14:45 and 14:47.
Yeah.
But I'm not telling you the order.
I'll take
it. I know the order. I can say I would back Brady in to beat me, given that he's run this industrial loop so fast.
Yeah.
It's short though, I think.
I'm gonna tip Brady because you've been bagging the crap out of him all night. I'm gonna give him the nod. So, and I reckon maybe this was Moose's strategy tonight, was to try and unnerve
something like
you.
That. Wouldn't believe it. Yeah, wouldn't put it past him. Wouldn't put it past him at all. I'd be happy with 14:45.
Yeah, I was gonna. That's
I'd
what
be
I was very, gonna
ask. I'd be happy with 14. 14 anything, 14:59, I'll go. Because it's really just a blowout, like for Steigen in a couple of weeks. I think that's.
I would want to run. I want to run faster than that for sure.
14:59.
If I ran 15 minutes, I'd be disappointed. Put it that way.
Yeah, no, I reckon you're the favourite going in.
Surely you boys can get within 30 seconds of your PBs.
I don't know.
Different world, bro.
I reckon we could. Yeah, I think I could. Yeah.
We
I think
ran
I'll
the
run.
Whole Berlin Marathon, remember? We've got that in our legs still.
Oh. Yeah.
I reckon I'll run around 14:40. That's what I reckon.
14:40.
Yeah, I reckon.
Wait, call someone out from the A grade heat, Julian, that you reckon you'll run quicker than.
No. Why would I do that?
Yeah, do it. We've got to get the numbers up. I told you. I've got to say more controversial stuff.
Oh, Steve Dineen.
Oh.
I don't know.
You've said it. You've said it. Steve Dineen, if you heard it here, just remember, Moose is coming for you.
No. I've got no dramas with anyone in that A race because I put down I actually wanted to be put in the B race because I don't think I'm at the A race. That's... Like you, I'm not going there.
Starting beef with Steve Dineen.
No. Chubb's a good bloke. I like him.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Watch your space, Julian. Tell us about the guest for this week before we go.
Oh yeah, cool. So tonight we have an Olympian interview with an Olympian from Rio. Her name's Selma Kajan. She grew up, well, you'll learn about it on the interview, but basically she's a 800-meter runner. She has a PB of 201, and she trains with the Melbourne Track Club. So it's going to be a really interesting one. I actually can't wait for the interview. I think we're going to get some really good insights and open up maybe a little bit more about sort of the closed-book lifestyle of one of the top training groups in Australia. That's what I'm interested in. We'll pick Selma's brain a little bit about what the day-to-day routines are for a full-time professional runner.
Should be a good show. Looking forward to it. All the best with the interview.
Thank you.
Righto, lads. Talk again next week. Thanks for your time again.
Good luck for Thursday.
Yeah.
Thanks, mate.
Should be good. Should be good. Looking forward to it. Going to have to shave my legs now if we're going to run 14:40.
Is there, I take it there'll be live stream?
Yeah. Julian's going to run off the front, you reckon, till we're pacing.
I'll be on live stream watching.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be there.
All right.
We'll be there.
Cool. Sounds good.
All right, boys. Thanks again for that.
See ya.
See you later. Bye-bye.
See you, mate. All right, welcome Selma Kajan to Inside Running.
Thanks for having me.
No worries. Have you listened to the podcast before?
I haven't listened to this podcast. I'm sorry. I'll give it a listen.
Yeah. That's all right. I wouldn't.
But in general, I'm not a huge podcast listener, so it's nothing against you guys.
Well, there's a lot of shit ones out there because I've been trying them lately, and it's been a good experience to learn what not to do on a podcast, I think.
Yeah,
lots of boring running ones out there, so I don't blame you for not getting into them. So you're our guest on the podcast this evening, and I guess we should explain why you're our guest.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, like, I first started to learn about you when I guess maybe a little bit late in your career, but the 2006 Olympics.
Yep.
But you've had quite a long career in athletics.
Yeah.
So can you tell us where it started and how you progressed?
Sure. So I pretty much started as an under six in the lats. I guess I was just always destined for running because both my parents were athletes. So my family's from the former Yugoslavia. They migrated over from Bosnia. And my dad was a marathon runner and did about 2:18 for the marathon.
Wow. Yeah. That's so actually a really significant time.
Yeah, it is. and my mum was a 400, 800 metre runner. And so she ran, I think, 53 for the 400 and 203 for the 800. And she still holds the national record, actually. But I'm now the fastest in the family, so a little milestone.
Yeah.
So it kind of all kicked off from there, just little laths going through the age groups, and probably around under probably 14s or something, I, you know, started to think, oh, I could be good at this, you know, was winning a few state titles, national titles, and really, really enjoyed it. So it kind of all just kicked off and progressed from there.
Yeah. Cool. So were you always a runner? Did you do other sports when you grew up?
I'd like to say I did, but not really. Yeah. So, I mean, I did the odd, like, netball and hockey through school sport and that sort of thing, but not to a very big extent. It was always running, and running was always the priority. I probably started training from when I was 10.
Yep.
Now, nothing too serious as a 10-year-old, just a couple times a week, you know, showing up to a bit of a run group. And, it got more and more involved from there.
Cool. Was it your dad who first started coaching?
No. So my very first coach was Sean Williams, who was Sweat Sydney at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, around when I was 10 years old, and I was actually the first kid in the group. And at that stage, it was just me and slowly a few more kids showing up a couple times a week with adults as well, and just going for a little run and jumping in and out of sessions. So I was with Sean for probably about 10 years or so. And then my dad took over for a good couple years, and then I eventually made my way to Nick Bedeau.
Yeah. How did that transition happen? So, for instance, from year 12, finish year 12, and then you think, what do I do next? Am I going to be a...
Yeah.
Were there any signs that you were going to be a professional runner in year 12?
So I had a lot of success probably towards the end of my junior years. I won, I think, the 1500 and the 800 and the under 23 national titles, ran a 205 as a 17-year-old. So for me, that was a huge kind of milestone.
Yeah.
And got an opportunity to go overseas to do a mile, which was really big. But at the end of year 12, I actually had an avicular stress fracture. So huge injury for a junior athlete and any sort of athlete. And it was a really big injury because it never actually healed, so I had to undergo surgery. And so it was probably about, 3 to 4 months sort of kind of have the surgery, get in a boot and cast and get on crutches, and just a really, really slow transition to running. So I was actually probably a pretty rubbish runner until 2013. I went through a few years where I really struggled with my injury, and then also just got really unwell and got chronic fatigue as well when I was kind of coming back through that. So, from about finishing high school 2009 to about 2013, till I ran another PB again, I was not a good athlete.
Wow. Yeah. That's a bit of a hurdle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that it also comes at that time when I guess you're supposed to be in your prime for maybe an 800 meter runner.
Yeah.
You're coming with it. You still got the speed in your legs, and
you're looking. Were you a 800 meter runner back then, or was it?
Yeah, I kind of hovered around the 400, 800, 1500. I did a bit of cross country as well at school, but when it got over 4 kilometres, I was like, I'm out. but really, 800 metres, that was always kind of my calling, and I guess my pet event that kind of followed me through, and I just enjoyed the distance. I was obviously suited towards it. You know, I may not be the fastest or have the most endurance, but somehow that 800 metres just worked. So that's kind of something I just carried through.
Just the sweet spot.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was it in 2013 that you feel like where you made your breakthrough, or you started to, things started to change for you?
I guess I got my health back on track, and that was the main thing. You know, a few years kind of overcoming an injury and then getting really unwell. I finally found a naturopath who actually got me back on track, and she was so helpful and was probably the first person who actually listened to me and kind of was really forward thinking. Rather than me coming to her with ideas, she came up with other things to trial and things like that. And so it was probably a good 6 to 12 months seeing this naturopath that got me my health back on track. And then from there, the training could just get to that another level. Like, I was always training throughout the whole process, even though it was really frustrating and at times I didn't want to do it. I kind of just always hung in there because it was something that I really wanted to do. And having that success from an early age, I kind of thought, you know, this is something that I could be good at.
You knew it was there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. With a naturopath, like, was this a more of a nutrition thing that you overcame, or...?
It's interesting. It was more like a chronic fatigue sort of thing. So after all the doctors and blood tests and things that I underwent, found out that I had glandular fever, I think sometime in 2011, was never aware of it, and probably just ran my body into a bit of a hole because I just continued to train. You know, didn't know I had glandular fever, and just continued to try to train at a good level, and just got myself in a really, really bad place, to the point where I was just really malnourished. No, I couldn't absorb any sort of iron or nutrients or anything like that, so recovery was really terrible. It was just a really, really bad time.
That's also maybe that a lot of runners would be in that position and think, geez, I'm unfit, I need to train more. And you can fall in the trap of pushing yourself over the edge.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, recovery is really, really important, especially when you're trying to get to that kind of next stage in your training. It's not all about the amount of Ks you're doing or, you know, the intensity and things like that. I mean, obviously it depends what event you're training for. But for me, I found I was unwell and I was just still trying to grind through it, and my body was clearly telling me to stop.
That's tough.
Yeah.
And now, so 2013 rolls around, you're feeling better, your results are improving.
Yeah.
You get a new coach. What year was it that you joined Nick Badova again?
So I was still actually with my dad. I think dad kind of took the reins. He was always in the picture, just being a running himself and a supportive parent. He took a real interest in my running.
Yeah.
He's a big running nerd. Good. I'm sure he'll listen to this podcast
Hopefully.
<here.
laughs>
So dad coached me from when I finished high school through those injuries and through the illness till 2015. So it wasn't till early 2015 that I actually joined Nick. So I had really, really good success with dad 2013, 2014 season as well. You know, got back to running PBs again and was really consistent. Started 2015 Australian season, decided to make the change to go with Nick.
And what was it, given that you just had a lot of success with your dad and you're running PBs and it's all on an upward sort of path, why the change?
I guess I had been going overseas for the European season from 2013 with Nick's group, so I had an idea of what kind of training they were doing. I would always kind of try to jump in and out, but obviously because I had a different coach, it was always a bit difficult. So I was always kind of there, but not really in a group. So I trained a lot on my own, which is good, but it's also very difficult. I did have some success with dad, which was great, but for me, I kind of saw, I guess, the professional and elite level that Nick's group was at, and I thought, if I wanted to be there, I needed to make this risk. And I kind of saw Rio, you know, coming in the next few years, and I thought, you know, it's worth the risk. I've got to make a big change and just give it a go. So, yeah.
Yeah. Was there an element of Nick can help me make a living doing this?
I mean, no, not really. I guess I never really factored in running, making a living with running, just because I was very much aware of the type of sport athletics is, and being surrounded by even, you know, really elite runners within Nick's group, and a lot of them just, you know, kind of scraping by. So that didn't really come into the equation. It was more that I thought he was a coach that could definitely take me to that next level and possibly create more opportunities in terms of getting into better races and, you know, just being a more professional athlete.
Yep. Okay, so I think now's probably a good time to explain what or who Nick is and what his group is.
Yep.
So we see a lot in social media. It seems like the group has a real strong presence on Instagram and whatever about basically like promoting themselves, which is what their job is as an athlete, and promoting the group. So we see a very, where they're very much in the public eye, but we don't actually know a lot about it. So can you just explain a little bit about what the Melbourne Track Club is?
Yeah, so the Melbourne Track Club is, I guess, made up of a lot of different athletes, not necessarily from Melbourne, but all around Australia and even around the world. We have a lot of international athletes, and we're all coached by Nick Bedeau. And I guess what everyone else sees through, I guess, a social media perspective is a very much a sort of glamorous sort of athletic lifestyle, which, you know, it's not to say that we don't have perks, that's for sure. You know, there are some amazing experiences and things you get to do as an athlete under Nick's guidance, which, you know, you can't take for granted. You might get into that Diamond League race or, I don't know, meet some other amazing athletes. And we do spend a majority of our time overseas, so we kind of break up our season, Australian season. We're here for 6 months. And then we go over around April, May, over to Europe, and we're there for 6 months as well, which sounds really exciting, I'm sure, to a lot of people, and it is to a certain extent. But then there's also the aspect where, you know, you're leaving behind a lot of family and friends. You're constantly travelling, living out of a suitcase. Not always the most amazing flights. You might have a red-eye flight or something, going to some tiny meet in Poland or something like that. Yep. You know, there are those sides as well, which I'm sure a lot of people don't see on social media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just on that, like, it seems very simple, like, just to be flying everywhere. But often I see these athletes and they might not be the most... Like, you wouldn't think they would be on a lot of money in terms of salary, but they're flying to all these different corners of the world, maybe week in, week out.
Yeah.
Who pays for that?
So the great thing about Nick's group is he's a manager and a coach, which a lot of people don't have the luxury of having. And he pretty much takes care of everything up front for us, which is amazing because that takes a lot of stress out of kind of that side of trying to be an elite athlete. So having to book your flights or finding your accommodation or trying to get into a meet, Nick takes care of that all, which is amazing. And then usually just, you know, doesn't let it go, obviously. You know, we're still accountable for all that spending. He obviously takes a percentage of prize money or contracts and things like that. And then at the end of the season, we get an invoice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so at the end of it, so basically he knows what you're making in terms of your prize money.
Of course.
Appearance fees. Yeah. And then basically says, here's my card at the end.
Well, yeah. So he goes through it and he does try to do the best for athletes, you know, in terms of rent and things like that or where we stay. You know, it's not glamorous accommodation. It's not a 5-star hotel. He understands what people earn and that some athletes, you know, do struggle to make a living in athletics. So he does really try to accommodate everybody, which is not an easy thing. He's got a very full plate on his shoulders, you know, when, especially when he's managing like 50 plus athletes, all sorts of levels all around the world, but somehow he makes it work, and he's willing to invest in us pretty much.
Yeah, it does seem it seems like a lot of hard work. Like, I'm just imagining the logistics of trying to organise this.
Yeah.
On his
definitely
behalf, and that seems pretty difficult. I can barely organise my own trip.
Exactly. I'm sure he has a lot of sleepless nights and lots of emails back and forth. You might get an email from Nick at like 1 a.m. asking us, have you know, you've been confirmed for this meet or something, like, because he's not with us a lot of the time either. When we go overseas for 6 months, you know, he's got a family, two girls and a wife in Australia, so he doesn't want to spend the whole time overseas, you know, around Europe in coming aboard on races with us. You know, he wants to stay at home as well and spend time with his family.
Yes.
So, a lot of weird business hours for him, and a lot of money and investment up front.
Yeah. And if you have a poor season and the prize money is very low, yet the rent and the flights add up quite high,
mm-hmm.
are there any athletes left in a hole at the end of the season?
I'm not sure. I mean, I haven't really spoken to people in the group about this, but it's always difficult. You know, there are very few people who do have a contract or, you know, do earn that prize money. So I think, I mean, from my perspective, I know that I don't make any money.
Yeah.
I think one season I might have made a bit of money. I might have broke even, actually.
Yeah.
So I'm sure a lot of people do struggle, but you kind of just hope, you know, you'll have a good race again, or, you know, if you do have that good race, maybe you'll get a contract out of it or something like that. Something will pop up. And Nick always does try to, he understands that people need to kind of have a life and make a living. So he does kind of try to mix it up, and if there is a race coming up that's going to have good prize money, he tries to put you in it. Tries to give you the best opportunity, pretty much.
Yeah, well, that's also how he gets paid too. Yeah. So I can imagine that you guys work out the best meets for everyone, and that's your profession. You need to be chasing that.
Yeah.
But your job is to get paid for running, and that's how you get paid for running.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's understandable. So given that he's not there for such a long period, how does he monitor the training? So he's the coach and manager. So during this, maybe the 3 months where he's not actually with the group mm-hmm. or the athlete, do you send feedback, or how does he monitoring how each athlete is going?
So pretty much, he'll email or WhatsApp us all pretty regularly. We all kind of get... Well, it depends where we are. So if I'm in Australia, you know, and I'm based in Ballarat, I'm not travelling to Melbourne sometimes, he'll send me a program for the week and I kind of just report back at the end of the week, or if something's happened or hasn't gone quite to plan, I'll get in touch with him as well. So he's really, really good at communicating and getting feedback from us. Usually he also has someone who's been watching the session, or just like a senior person in the group. So previously it's been Collis, who, you know, has had a bit of downtime due to injury. So he's usually rocking up to track sessions and workouts and things like that, and keeping a close eye on everybody and then reporting back to Nick, as well as getting all of our feedback as well. So we'll all text him and things like that after a track session and let him know how we've gone.
Yeah, so he's got a pretty good finger on the pulse of the group.
Yeah. And I think the train that we do, it doesn't change too much. So we pretty much know what we're doing day in, day out. The track session or something like that might just change slightly.
Yep.
But it's pretty, it's a pretty good routine.
Well, that's a pretty good entry to my next question, which is, given you have so many athletes and everyone has different strengths, weaknesses, events, 800 through to the half marathon in the same group, you all seem to do very similar sessions.
I think, I mean, for me, being more of an 800 girl, I've been lucky enough to have Brittany McGowan this year and Zoe Buckman as well. So we kind of have small groups within the group that we all do little workouts with, and we might all start off doing the same session. Like, we might all start with a few mile repeats or something like that to start off, and then we'll all break away into kind of our net group. So 8:15 kind of clustered together, and then you've got the more 5K, 10K, and then the half marathon, and the marathon guys probably not on the track.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. They do their own workout.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Yeah, that's really interesting, because from the outside, like we see the photos on Instagram.
Yeah.
See a train of 50 people or a lot of people doing the same workout.
I mean, sometimes we might. Like, I mean, if it's a threshold or something, you know, we all do that to some extent. It might not be as long as one another, but we're all in the park doing a threshold or something like that, or K-reps, you know, that kind of suits everyone. But again, some people might be doing a bit more than others.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. And the training camps that you've been on, where have you found the best location to fit for training, or what have you enjoyed the most? Which training trip?
Yeah, so we do have a few kind of training camps that we go through throughout the world. So it's been Falls Creek in Australia, and then Mount Laguna in America, which is just out of San Diego. We just went to Spain this year, actually, in a little training camp just out of Madrid prior to World Champs. And the Netherlands, I think we've gone to there. So we try to mix it up a little bit. But I think by far my favourite is Mount Laguna in California. And I think Nick would agree with that as well, because he keeps sending us there. There's just something about the place. Nobody else goes there. There's nothing to do. It's very basic, just like these weird little kind of wooden remote cabins, just hikers kind of coming in and out, going along the Pacific Crest Trail.
Yeah.
It's really rugged, really tough terrain, so it's mostly trail running.
Yeah.
There's not that much altitude. It's actually about the same as Falls Creek. But just something about there, every time we've sent people there, and I can say this personally as well, you get so fit. It's really hard, but if you survive the end of the camp, almost everyone gets a PB.
Yeah.
So it's a magic sort of place.
Except Jack Davies.
He was injured, so that doesn't count. He'll come back to redeem himself, I'm sure.
That's interesting that 800 metre finds the trails, get them fit when there's no track there, right?
No, but we do travel down once a week to San Diego and do a track workout, so we can go down to sea level as well and get that intense workout, which is really, really good.
Yeah.
It's strange for me to say that, I love going there and just clocking the Ks and running up the hills. I don't really. I hate probably every minute that I'm there. It's really, really hard. But the rewards afterwards make me appreciate it so much.
There's a little bit of the Percy, Serity, Portsy training camp in that, I think, where you're just blue-collar doing work, and that's what pays off. Yeah, there's no, like, luxuries, no nightclubs, no pubs.
There's no magic secret or anything like that. It's just, like, sleep in these weird cabins in the woods and just get up and do your work every day.
Yeah, cool.
It's just the hard slog.
Oh, I mean, I like that.
That's
So, just within the group, I mean, I feel like there's no one's really talked about the group much, and so that's why I'm harping on. And also we had some listener questions.
Yeah, no worries.
And this is my question, actually.
Yeah.
How is the pecking order in the group established? Is it through medals, PBs? Is it the older guys?
Yeah.
Stronger personalities? Who's got the most Instagram followers? Like, there is a pecking order in every group.
Yeah. That's an interesting one. I feel like a few people might think they're, you know, a bit high up when they're really not. You know, so it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, you've got most Instagram followers or you've won some medals. I mean, we all celebrate each other's winnings and things like that. But I think from what I've seen, it would definitely be just experience. So, I mean, when you look at Colas Birmingham or Ryan Gregson, they're definitely the most experienced and they've been in the group the longest. I mean, Ryan's been in the group for as long as Colas, but he's only 27, which is, you know, crazy. So, you know, he's kind of coming up the ranks and he'll definitely take on that more senior role purely because he's the most experienced, but I mean, he's also had some amazing results as well. So he definitely knows his stuff.
Yeah.
And then you've got someone like Brett Robinson as well, who I think's getting to that level as well. And again, he's been around for a few years, you know, he's been injured, he's been overseas. So he's kind of gone through it all and he understands, you know, what it takes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. That's interesting. Cause even in a local group, you'll always find that the more experienced guy will be the guy who leads the group and decides on the run and It's good to hear it works up top as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially at the moment, the last 2 years, I'd say, we have so many young athletes coming through, and we've had a lot of young athletes join the group.
Yeah.
So I think it's just really important for them to kind of learn from those older, more experienced guys because they've been through it. They, you know, you don't want to make the same mistakes, pretty much. You just want to try and learn as much as possible and, kind of just do the hard work.
Yeah. All right, so tell me about Rio.
Yes.
That's, I mean, on paper, that's your biggest event you've been in.
Yep.
The Olympics.
Definitely. And I don't know if there's a bigger one.
No, there's not really. Like,
not for track and field, anyway.
I think when you start to perform well, like the Olympics and being an Olympian is the goal.
Yeah.
For nearly everyone.
Yeah, definitely.
And you achieved that. Mm-hmm. And so that the race, your race in particular, mm-hmm. can you just play it out and tell us how it all went down?
Yeah, so I mean, making the Olympics for me was amazing and it was such a huge achievement. And it was something that I was working towards that whole year and it wasn't until that very last moment that I got there. But that was, you know, for me to make that level was such a huge thing. Just to get there alone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I still had goals, of course, going into the race. I went to Mount Laguna prior to going to the Olympics with the rest of the group and did a really good training camp and then went over to Florida for our pre-departure camp and then over to Rio. And because I was at the end of the program, I kind of had to wait the very last moment to head on in. So I missed all the team sort of things. I missed the little mock opening ceremony and just I guess more of the Olympic experience.
Was that Nick's decision? Did he plan everyone's entry into the village?
I think he definitely had some influence over that. And at the end of the day, you're there to perform, you're there to race.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had to go back, I probably would have changed it a little bit.
Yeah.
Just because it is the Olympics. You don't know when you're going to be at an Olympic Games or just a competition at that level ever again.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important, especially if it is your first, just to kind of experience as much as you can. So going there, really excited to race, and I was really fit, probably the best shape of my life. Which I'm sure everyone is and you hope to be going into the Olympics. And I think I got there on a Saturday morning and I was racing on the Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, really, really short turnaround. But that's okay because you don't really want to spend lots of time just doing nothing in an Olympic village prior to competing as well. And it was, it was amazing. It was really great. Kind of just tried to be a bit low-key heading into the race. But
did you have all the family there?
I had my dad and my sister who came over. So I think I caught up with them on the Monday. So they kind of just flew in just before my race.
Yep.
So just had a bit of a quick catch-up with them. And obviously they came to watch me race. And, the race itself was interesting. It was... So I actually got really unwell on the Sunday before my race, which I probably haven't talked about really a lot just because it's not a thing that you kind of want to...
Like a stomach bug?
I got gastro.
Yeah.
So I was fine. And then, the Sunday, probably afternoon, I was just feeling very nauseous. Went straight away to see the team doctors and that sort of stuff. And they gave me like some anti-nausea and just try to drink lots of fluid, just monitor it. And I was just like, okay, this is great timing sort of thing.
You're stressing out.
Well, I just tried not to because it was kind of out of my control. And I was like, it's still Sunday. It'll be all right. You know, nothing dramatic's happened. I just feel a bit off.
Yeah.
And then that evening I just started to vomit and it was really, really bad. So I had to go back to the doctors and they, because you're such in a confined space, I guess in Olympic Village, they said, oh, we have to quarantine you. So they had to move me to a room by myself. I was just really unwell for the next couple of days. You know, I was trying to do everything I could, but it was just one of those things that was kind of just taking over my body. And I was, really, really bad stomach bug, just really bad fever, night sweats. And it was just one of those things. And I remember sitting down the night before getting ready, like packing my bag for the race, and I'm just sitting there and I'm thinking, why is this happening to me? because it's just like, you know, those sort of opportunities don't come around very often. I'd worked so hard to get there, and it was my chance to kind of show everybody what I could do. You know, I might not have made it through to the semi-finals or anything like that, because that was such a harsh task, but I wanted to PB because I felt like that was within me. And so it was a little bit heartbreaking, but at that stage I just kind of had to block it out because I was going to race no matter what. I was like, you know, I made it this far. I didn't think that I would be an Olympian if I didn't cross the line. So I just tried to block it out and just do the best I could. So the race, feeling not amazing, but just kind of just didn't care at that stage. Was just like, I'm just going to race as best as I can and just cross that line and make sure I become an Olympian.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I did. It was a rubbish time. It was definitely not my best, nowhere near my best, and I wasn't really in the race. But when I crossed that line, I wasn't disappointed. I was just like, I made it this far. I did everything I could have on the day.
Mm.
There's nothing more my body could have given, and I became an Olympian. So I just tried to think about all those positives.
Yeah. I mean, that's some serious bad luck, really. And although you don't want to find excuses, that's an excuse. Like, everyone's run off gastro before, and it takes a good week to recover from that.
Yeah.
So,
and unfortunately, when you're at a level at, like, the Olympics, you can't even be a little bit off your best, because you are literally racing the best people in the world. Yeah. So you have to bring your A game. You're very exposed if you don't.
Yeah. Oh, it's interesting. No one, like, that you haven't really talked about that before.
No, not really. I mean, it's one of those things, like, I probably don't share that much in public anyway. Like, I'm not a huge social media person or anything like that. I keep those sort of things pretty private. So, you know, I know what happened. My close family and friends know what happened.
Yeah.
There's really not much to say, like, you know.
It would be very easy to try to make, not an excuse for that performance, but to justify why you weren't at your best that day.
That would.
I mean, I'll...
And I'm sure a lot of people have judged it or say, oh, why are you sending someone like that? You know, they can't even finish in the top three or make through the rounds or anything like that. But there's a big story, you know. There's always a backstory to everyone's journey and things like that. And at the end of the day, not everyone's going to win a medal. A very small percentage of people win medals.
Yeah.
So there's always small goals and small achievements for every single athlete out there.
Yeah. Oh, that's well wrapped up.
Yeah.
So now that we're sort of post 2016,
2017,
where are we looking now for Selma's running? What's next on the agenda or the radar?
So running is going well, I guess. I'm kind of just trying to enjoy it a little bit more. I think coming off the back of an Olympic year is very stressful, especially if you've done it in a way that I did, where I chased it a time for 6 months. And probably by the end of last year, I hated 800s because I had done so many. That's kind of the bad thing about being kind of a middle distance runner. You can do an 800 twice a week, you know, if you need to. So it was definitely taxing both mentally and physically, and I had a nice long season break and stuff like that. But this year, you know, I didn't have a great year. I had an injury to start the year, so I kind of had to miss the whole Australian season. And then just got started working from about April and just tried to string something together. But I must say my confidence was probably down. You know, I wasn't enjoying it as much because of the situation I was in. I was trying to get fit again, but trying to race, trying to chase the time again.
Yeah.
And it's just really stressful. So I guess this time round, I want to enjoy it that little bit more and just kind of put everything into perspective. And, you know, if results happen, they happen. If they don't, that's okay. I'll survive.
Yeah.
That I'm just trying to enjoy my running a lot more.
Yeah,
yeah.
Cool. And does that include maybe some changes in distances or...?
I'd love to mix it up a little bit, just because you can get a little bit stale doing the same event. And previously I haven't, only because I've been chasing a time.
Yeah.
So I'd love to mix it up. I mean, my favourite races this year, oddly, have been a mile in Darwin, which was just a fun road race, and a 12K at Rumballarat. So really weird, odd distances, but I guess it's just because I don't get to do that stuff a lot. So yeah. I'd love to mix it up a little bit.
And you have to be a very good athlete to win Rumballarat.
Oh, yeah, of course. Only the best. Like, there you goes, Olympics, Rumballarat.
Yeah, Com Games. That's what I thought too.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
No worries.
Yeah, this has been really enlightening, I think. Definitely our most accomplished runner we've had on the podcast so far. So, yeah, thanks so much, Selma.
No worries. Happy to chat with you guys.
Cheers.
Thanks. Pain. Now I hear you say you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? On the sugar of my skin, I burn all your names. If it's all the same, I'll keep on walking. Doesn't matter if it's